Do it. Do the 3, 2, 1, and I'll stop you.
All right. On three. All right. One, two.
No, you messed up the mess up, you idiot.
What did you want me to do?
You do like you did before where you messed it up. You did 3, 2, 1, and I stopped you.
Oh. All right.
Wait, let me explain something to you. I'm the dude.
What is it?
It's the one that said bad motherfucker.
Who throws a shoe? Honestly.
The first rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club.
We're sending you back to the future.
All right, welcome, cinephiles, movie junkies, film buffs. We are back with Flick of the Week. I am Nick Drake.
And I'm Jordan O'Moore. And this is a show, I guess, for movie people. And by movie people.
This is a special episode. It's what we're calling an evergreen episode.
Super
might
special.
Be a periodic kind of, more than a segment, but something we circle back to every once in a while to have something a little more invasive in film and things like that surrounding it without, you know, having to talk about the latest movie. So something a little more pleasing for some ear holes, perhaps.
Well, get to it. What are we talking about?
All right. So I think I kind of messed up when we were doing the end of the episode last week where I said Academy Award winners, but I really wanted to talk about the dichotomy of award winners and them turning into action stars in the same career.
I would say, to make a more succinct title, it's Serious Actors Turned Action Stars.
Yes, succinct.
You're Googling that right now? What does succinct mean?
Thesaurus.com. That works. Okay. Well, you know, just call it whatever the hell you want then, all right?
Jeez.
Okay. So here's some examples.
And after
examples.
That day, Flick of the Week was no more.
And that day, it went to Ziwa Taneo.
I'm actually surprised we didn't mention it in episode 19. I think that's what the Rambo one was.
Yeah, 19. Yeah. This is 20.
Episode 20.
Wow.
Yeah, come a long nice. Way.
Here we go. So here's some kind of examples of what we're talking about for the unsuspecting listener. We are talking about people kind of like Liam Neeson, who, you know, came from Schindler's List, and basically the only thing he had done nearly in this genre was Rob Roy, maybe. And then Taken, so to speak, it takes off and turns into an action career. Helen Mirren, you know, a dame Helen Mirren out of nowhere just starts dipping into action films at Red 2 and that recent movie Anna. I'm also thinking like Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, you know, before Daredevil was nothing really. And he only did that, believe it or not, I heard this from Kevin Smith. He did that because apparently they were doing away with superhero movies, if you can believe it.
So he was afraid he would never get to do one?
Well, so he didn't think there was going to be another Batman. And so he took whatever role he could get and did Daredevil, blah. So Batman was kind of an easy choice, I would think. And then even Matt Damon, though, Jason Bourne. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, the first Jason Bourne was a serious drama, and then it just kind of went off the rails.
Do you think so? I thought it was action for sure. It had the jumper, for God's sake.
Again, kind of tailing on what we were talking about in the last episode, is that's what made the Rambo First Blood so good, is it was like... I consider that an Oscar like potential drama while
Jason Bourne.
Yeah, the first Jason Bourne. It was a Born man identity. Who lost his memory, lost his identity. Is that what it is? Born identity? That's the first
one? Born Identity.
Okay, yeah, he forgot. He doesn't know who the fuck he is, and he's on the search to figure that out. And it's a real serious drama, I felt. I mean, maybe I'll have to rewatch it and then recant my statement, but I love that movie.
The Bourne movies are like the perfect thing for most generations. Like, my grandpa can, you know, definitely appreciate the storytelling and the fact that it's not cheesy, and I can really appreciate that too, but I'm really there to see him kick ass when I go see an action movie like that. But I mean, even like actresses like Charlize Theron, you know, she did that one Reindeer's Game movie, but really she, you know, Monster, Cider House Rules, and then now she's Atomic Blonde and Mad Max.
Yeah, yeah, true.
So this is kind of what we're, you know, talking about when we're saying actors that came from a certain type of film moving into these action movies. And frankly, action movies are, you know, they're not known for the acting. They're really there for looking cool and cheap thrills and special effects. That's what they're made for. It's a, you know, the way it's always been. People, I mean, it's nice if it has it, like Jason Bourne might have been a good example there, but people don't go for the intellectual story or the message that the film is kind of like tasking viewers to relate to. They're just there for the initial interest from the trailer to see, you know, kind of like a fight ballet on screen. But, you know, why do you think that actors kind of jump into that? Do you think it's more for fun, for the career expansion, or is it all just for the money?
Well, it's kind of a combination of things. Not everyone's story is exactly the same, but I would say that a big proponent of what leads actors into being typecast, quote unquote, is their agents and the agencies that represent them. Is because it's not really that the actor is begging and needing money. It's that the agents, you know, they want to keep making money. And that means they want their golden goose to keep producing, you know,
the product to keep paying off.
Yeah. So like the one I put at the top of the list, I'm surprised you didn't say it, is Tom Cruise. So Tom Cruise had a very promising career in the start. He was like a good actor. He was in, and he was nominated for Best Actor in 3 movies. Magnolia, Jerry Maguire, Born on the 4th of July.
I missed that one. Okay.
But he, I've always looked at, I was like, shit, his career is so good. Actually, here's another one that I didn't even put on the list. Is what's his name? Wow.
What movie?
Fucking Leaving Las Vegas, dude.
Oh, Nicolas Cage.
Nick Cage. He was so good, and then his career just went down the shitter. And I think both of them had their careers. Well, his career didn't go down the shitter, but it in terms
of teeter totters for sure.
Yeah, but in terms of it, like a promising lifelong career, I feel like Nick Cage is one of those people in a different trajectory that would have been the guy that got like the Lifetime Achievement Award by now, like Denzel, you know what I mean? If he would have stayed the course, he would have made half the amount of movies he made. But
here's the thing, though, is I think that is an example of for the money, because it was kind of well known that he blew through his money. And at the point where he started going to pawn shops to start making money back on the stuff that he blew.
Yeah, yeah.
And so these straight to DVD movies, Redbox movies that you find, even on Netflix, you're like, that didn't make it to theaters, did it? Because it didn't. And, you know, it was probably just an easy paycheck.
Well, the point of what I'm saying about them, I think both of them, is that there was a trajectory change, and I think it happened when they were cast in something that could be considered a crossover. So, like, trying to think of Tom Cruise's career. Let's see. Tom Cruise.
Hold on 1 second.
Okay.
Okay, I'm good. Sorry. I have a family, people. Sorry.
Well, here, let's clap back in, because I had a little, little flub there too. So, okay.
That was a clap, if I've ever heard one.
That was the clap.
You might have the clap from that clap. God damn.
I think for Tom Cruise, it was probably Top Gun.
Yeah.
Top Gun is a trajectory change. Think about it, because it's something that in his normal like career, it's a career defining movie, which was a crossover. It's like a drama, but it was an action movie. I mean, he's not like wielding guns and like running into battle.
Yeah, in my my first example there, I think like it was, and he's the perfect example. It is all for the fun for that guy. He don't need the money. And there's a story he told on some talk show where, you know, Jerry Bruckheimer, the big producer, wanted him for this movie, and he initially, at least, only agreed to do it so he could ride with the Blue Angels, and like that was it was for the perks. And now with this newest one, he's having fun with it, and he really only wanted to do it because they were willing to film it in more of a practical effect way. Like, you see it in the trailer, like that's a real takeoff. It's not CGI. So he's definitely so I think that's definitely a career in for fun, you know, for sure. I don't know that he imagined his career would take that turn. So you think maybe it's just sometimes people dip in their toe and then get in the bug?
Well, it's like Tom Cruise is kind of his own animal, like where he's, like you said, is some of the things he takes on is purely because he wants to do it.
I think that's all he does now.
But it's, I think that a big part of his, now, like he's too old to be doing most of the things that he does in terms of like what like Hollywood would cast. It's like,
I think that he honestly wants to die making a film. That is my like honest theory, because how cool would it be, one, but two, like, if you're gonna go out, you know, with a bang.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying that I think that a big part of it is an agent catches wind of, oh, everyone loved that, let's do that again.
Keep it's more this, of that. Yeah.
So,
and you think like, I mean, here's the thing with actors is people think like they can always choose. At the beginning of your career, you can't really choose. You can't be somebody that when you're not holding many cards, you're nobody. Well, you got to take what people are hiring for.
You're so right. And here's something that almost no one ever really talks about is that a lot of times actors sign on to contracts. You don't like realize three movie. That. The three movie deal with, and it's not like three movies in, it's not like three sequels. It's like if you do a picture with Universal, they usually want you for more than a movie. They know. They're like, this guy's going to be a big star or whatever. They sign you and they give you a better paycheck out the gate if you say, oh, I'll do three movies. And an infamous event was...
that has to be how all Marvel movies are made. Like, it's got to be.
Yeah, that's a little different because they're committing to a role that they know has part of the EU.
But maybe nobody will like that role, though, so they got to get them on there no matter what.
Yeah.
And it's probably done by Disney, so... It's either going to be three Black Panthers or three of something else.
Yeah. A famous situation referring to a actor who was signed on to a production company for multiple movies is Edward Norton. You heard this story?
Is this the one where he like didn't want to do the Avengers after Hulk or something like that?
No. Okay. Well, he's been a very testy actor for years on all sorts of projects. Queen.
I heard he's died down, but hey.
Yeah. But specifically, his biggest story was that he had to be the villain in The Italian Job, and he's like, I don't want to do this fucking movie. It's stupid. And he had no interest in being in it, but he was contractually obligated to the studio to do that movie. So he just barely, he like completely phoned it in, which is funny because a lot of people consider that to be one of his better roles.
Yeah.
Which is funny because he's like, he would not be on set more than a minute that he needed to be to do the, like, he just
being a drama
memorized
queen.
The lines and said them on camera and left. That's like,
it looked like he put some more work in there too. Like, it wasn't just like, maybe because he didn't want to be looked at that way. That, I mean, that could have been why, but.
Well, yeah, he doesn't want to, it wasn't. It's his job. It's contractually, he's not allowed to sabotage a movie. And I know there's some nuance there because it's acting, but it's like, you're still supposed to bring it. You know what I mean? Like, if you're in a movie, you still got to do it. to your best ability.
How could you prove it? You're acting wooden, and then they're going to say in court, like, he didn't give it his all.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of also like if you're an artist in anything, even though you don't want to do something. So say you're a tattoo artist and, like, someone wants a fucking, you know, big, veiny, you know, triumphant dick on their arm. Yeah, you if the money's really good, you're like, shit, I'm going to do this. But you're just kind of phoning it in. Yes. I'm a tattoo artist.
Didn't you date a tattoo artist?
I dated a tattoo artist, yeah.
You think she ever, like, drew any veiny dicks on people?
No, but I'm almost certain that 98% of the tattoos she does, she has no interest in doing.
Okay.
Including the ones that she's done on me. She's like, I don't want to do this. Like, she really didn't want to do the bat on my arm. And actually so much so that she didn't do it. I remember now. I actually had her friend do it. But the point is that when you're any kind of artist at all, you still got to, like, show up and do good work because you know you're putting your name on it. And especially mm-hmm. an actor. It's like, I have to do this movie, but it's my face and my name is going to be in this movie. So I can't do a shitty job, especially if he takes himself seriously. So
let's circle this back to the relevance of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry for any background noise. It's crazy over here. But do you think that actors kind of get thrown into action movies almost unwillingly, kind of like that instance?
I bet it's happened sometimes. I mean, we could probably jump in some of these actors on this list in their IMDb's, yeah. kind of go down the history, and I bet we could point out something that's pretty obvious, you know, something glaringly obvious.
Here's what I know, it's kind of on the flip side of this, is Liam Neeson and Matt Damon are kind of on the other side of that coin. Matt Damon was like, he said in an interview after the first Born Identity, he wasn't getting, like, any offers, and he found something, and he's like, okay, well, this, you know, I see it's kind of an action flick, but I like it. It's got teeth. Mm-hmm. And he's like, after that, I got, like, 9 or 10 offers. And then Liam Neeson, he thought that Taken was going to be a B movie. Like, that's how unsure of how his career was going to be. And that took off, and he ran with it.
Yeah, well, I guess you're right. I mean, like I said, going back to the beginning of this conversation, is that sometimes there's nuance to this. There's all sorts of routes because everyone's life is a little different. So sometimes it's for money, sometimes it's for roles because you're not getting offered many roles, and then other times it's like what I would assume to be the most. I can't think of the word right now. The biggest reason why this happens is agents, I would assume. I could be wrong.
Okay.
But I'm assuming that it's hard to tell because we don't see this and we don't hear about these conversations that happen or the way that someone's career is getting shaped, but I'm almost certain it has a lot to do with your agent because your agent is the liaison between you and roles. They, you know, they're the ones that get the scripts. They're the ones that filter out things and make negotiations. So just between having an agent or a different, like one agent or another, you might, you know, be more prone to getting movies with one production company or another, you know, because of their relationships.
Well, you know, I'm kind of glad that you said that because it kind of leads me into my next question here. And I completely agree, but I feel like maybe that's not true after you have a resume. Like, I don't think it can be the agent when you're Sean Penn, you know, and you do an action movie. I really, you know, I'm finding it hard to believe that he didn't have any say, you know, unless he really wanted some other movie. And, like, for instance, like, this does happen a lot. Like, somebody really wants to do one movie. Like, I think Ryan Reynolds wanted to do, what's it called? Deadpool. I'm pretty sure they got him on some other films for that. Like, I was watching this one movie, Criminal, and I was like, that had to be part of a deal because he had one line. There's no reason for him to be in it.
Yeah.
He doesn't serve any purpose to this film. It had to be part of a deal. And, like, sometimes it's just like a glaring instance just staring you in the face. What do you think about that?
Yeah. Well, I guess you could say if you're in demand, which people go in and out, they dip in and out of being in demand.
Right.
And maybe, like you said, like some deals some movies are as a result of like a chess move in your career. It's like, okay, right. I'm going to do like, what's his name? Vin Diesel. It's like, I'm going to do a bunch of movies to fund my, you know, passion project. What is that thing that he did? The Witcher or something?
Well, no, he's actually planning, or he has been, last I read this, he's trying to do basically a Lord of the Rings scale of Hannibal, like the conqueror on the elephants, and he's been doing like every, you know, left and right thing he can to fund this himself because nobody else will. Was what I read on an article on him. But yeah, so I mean, that's definitely, I mean, I'm sure it's fun on some level, and he made friends obviously with Paul Walker, but it's definitely some chess moves being played there.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, because so if you think of leading to Deadpool. What other movies did Ryan Reynolds do to get that movie to happen? You know,
I'm thinking, and this was kind of like a tongue in cheek joke in the last Deadpool that he got offered Green Lantern and he probably saw that as a great career move. He's going to be the lead in a comic book movie that are selling out the door. People can't get enough of them. Mm-hmm. It was kind of, you know, still kind of on the early rise of the popularity striking again. And he probably would have done anything to get that because, you know, a huge studio, how could it fail, right? Ended up losing $250 million. But, you know, he definitely wasn't in control of that. I mean, think about it.
And you don't know. That's the other, like, the kind of the scary thing about being an actor in Hollywood is you really cannot, especially nowadays, you cannot tell what the fate of a movie is when you're making it, or even especially when you say yes to a script. You don't really know what that's going to be at the end. So the script could look good, but it's how they do it.
I think it has to do with who's attached to it too. Like, you know, people, you know, thinking about making Black Panther, and it was hard to find the director, and they weren't sure if the actor was going to work out right. And then it ended up being Ryan Coogler, of all people, I believe. So, right? That's right, right? Anyway, it has these... who was the guy that made Shaun of the Dead?
Edgar Wright?
Yes, and he made Baby Driver, right?
Yeah.
And so he was the original director for Ant-Man. And, you know, I'm thinking people probably thought that was pretty silly, but with him attached to it, that might get people that you normally wouldn't find in that role. You know, Michael Douglas ended up in that movie. There's got to be something to that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's always, there's always like a paper trail that you can follow to like realize why and how things happened with productions.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, in a podcast, I don't know if we have enough time to go through and investigate a lot of things. But
no, this isn't crime junkie, but
dang. I mean, what I'm fascinated by these things.
I mean, if it's part of, you know, like you were saying, it's the agents, you have to make a career move if you want to keep up in this business. But you're somebody that has, you're well off enough, you have a decent career, and, you know, then it comes to one of these movies. What do you think that says about the integrity when you're at that level? Is there such a thing as selling out when that's your job?
Well, the interesting thing about the idea of selling out is where you stand in your perspective of the situation. So,
but whose perspective?
Yeah, everyone,
fans, right?
So almost anyone can. Like, I was actually reading. There's a really cool artist that I like on Instagram, and he makes only in the last like 5 months has he become super well known, and a lot of like celebrities like Kanye and Miley Cyrus are buying his stuff for thousands and thousands of dollars, and he's blowing up. So, and he lives in like Canada, and he's building a massive studio, and his art is essentially that splash art where you take paint and he's like just a new wave Pollock, you know,
throw it over your shoulder and whatever.
Well, he puts a canvas on like a spinner, like a Lazy Susan, and like splashes paint on it when it's spinning. And but he'll do like massive canvases. But the point is that some people will regard that as not really art. And especially like the biggest, you know, armchair critic that's sitting at home just like Oh, you make millions of dollars with splash and paint. What about the other artists that do the same thing that are broke? And he posted this whole thing about that. And I'm just like, that's hilarious because, like, I don't care, at least from my perspective, because I am an artist in on multiple levels. It doesn't matter what your art is, quote unquote. Art is whatever moves you. So if you can make something and you make it well and it impacts people and they're willing to pay tons of money for it, good for you. So the point is that you can almost distill anything down to being like, oh, you're selling out for the man. You're making a bunch of money for nothing. You can just point at anyone who's making a bunch of money and say that for some reason or another. Because when to bring this back, ring it in to back to these actors and their careers, it's like, how do you know what it feels like to be Tom Cruise when you're, you know, you tailing off the success of Top Gun and then a bunch of offers come in for all these really awesome ideas of like action movies.
And again, you don't know how they're going to pan out.
Yeah. But you just go, you read scripts and if it excites you, you're like, you know what, let's do this. Not many people are planning. It's human nature. You don't really plan your life. You know, you roll with the punches. It's the surfer analogy. You're just like waiting for your wave. You get on your wave and then it passes you by or whatever. Or you ride it in. You know, I think that people put too much emphasis and thought into the whole sellout thing. And it's like,
I'm on the side of the fence where when it comes to acting, there is no selling out. I don't believe it because that's your profession.
Yeah.
Like if I was a woodworker and then somebody else told me that this other place is hiring, they want me and they want to pay me a larger salary, would that be seen as selling out? No, it'd be seen as me providing for my family and taking the next step that this other place wasn't going to get me to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's actually two. There's probably like two categories. It's like either you're working or you're not working. And that's it's kind of nice to be working in Hollywood, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Take the roles when you can get them. Even if you're huge, you know? Keep that fucking, you know, keep your relevance up. I do think that you can still pick, you know, pick and choose correctly. Like one of the person I put on the list too that I think has done some really stupid stuff is Mel Gibson.
Mal Gibson.
he's in front of the camera and behind the camera, a decorated, Oscar-nominated filmmaker for Braveheart and Hacksaw Ridge. Those are like the bookends of his career, essentially.
You know when you and your dad, just like for anybody, like have a moment where there's like the funniest dad joke? Like I can never get it out of my head, but my dad one time called it grave fart, and I can never not hear that when everyone says Braveheart. Sorry for that segue, but
Oscar-nominated movie, Grave Fart.
They may take our gas, but they'll never take our freedom! Anyway.
It was a fart. So deadly. It put you in your grave. Silent but deadly.
That's grave the fart. Ultimate freedom right there.
that's what they said. That's what they meant when they said freedom.
I think so. Freedom. Oh, thank God. I was holding that in my kilt all day.
Oh, God.
Thank God there was no losses around.
Jesus.
So, do you think that it's kind of good or bad, or does it matter with the ever-growing amount of actors that are kind of turning this way for film on its own? And the reason why I'm asking is because, you know, Dustin Hoffman has been known to say, like, it's polluting film. It's training, basically, our viewers to only want these kind of movies. I kind of think, like, maybe that might be right, because then people are not going to appreciate the intellectual films that people make. and you see, like, people just jumping on the bandwagon or money train, however you'd like to look at that, where, you know, we're having Robert Redford and Robert De Niro and Viola Davis be in these comic book movies. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Titanic, you know, was the staple for the most money-making film, and then Avengers Endgame is the one to top it.
Yeah. Well, you know what it is cinema is like fashion, and it comes in waves. It has eras and cycles. If you really look in the history of film, you'll see that there was a massive era of pirate movies and a massive Western era.
Western, yeah. I mean, I think comic book movies have replaced it.
Yeah, but I don't know where we are, but I feel like we're on the tail end of the comic book movie era.
I don't think so. As long as there's new ideas. See, the thing with the Westerns is we saw it all, but there's still so many untapped ideas. And it's like the films like Guardians of the Galaxy, where they were so off the wall, nobody knew those characters going in. Those are the films that are going to keep, like, eking out and bringing the whole the popularity back when it starts to dip. When those ideas run out, I think that's where. When people start making original ideas that aren't nearly as good as what's already laid out. And I think that's going to be a really long time.
Here's where I disagree with that. Is it's not about how many good ideas people can keep dishing out. It's about the interest of the audience. Is we, you know, the comic book movie and the superhero thing came about and started to be popularized right when we needed it. That's the same thing that it almost happens like clockwork, mirroring history. So
think about it, though. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
We had the comic book era, like, started to take off right after the Twin Towers. Right when we were dealing with a terrorist threat with our nation. And so people were turning to that, and they were interested in this kind of surreal hero that could come and save us. This is the same thing that happened with, like, Superman was dawning around the time that... No, was it Superman? I forget exactly who...
See, I see... You're saying that we might be kind of out of the era, but I think this might prove my point, is that we keep doing it, like, every 5 or 10 years since at least the 80s. Batman 1989, people, like, flipped out. It was like the first Avengers movie when that movie came out. And people were getting, like, Batman haircuts cutting through their heads. People were like, this is Batman, not that campy show. This is the real Batman. And I think that's because there was such a fan base behind it. And with all these good ideas, they're still untapped with fan bases behind it. It's going to be tough before that fire dies out.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just curious if they're... I mean, for me, it's ended. I'll still go see some superhero movies here and there, but my interest in them has faded, even though that like you said, like, oh, we still, there's so much that could be done, and that's great, but I'm ready for something new. And I think that there will be a lot of people in different audiences that feel the same, that, you know, we're going to enter an era here of something completely different. I don't know what it is yet.
Maybe, but here's the thing, is like, that's how DC has been. And, like, every couple years, there's a pick-me-up, like the Joker, and coming out here. And by the time you've heard this episode, it'll already be out. But you see what I'm saying? Like, Batman versus Superman started, you know, it had the great initial interest, and then it started waning. Justice League, nobody really cared for it. And, they kind of started to plummet. But then... A standalone, it's kind of a new idea. It's a standalone villain movie, like that. And yeah. It's not trying to be like an anti-hero, like the Suicide Squad was trying to be, where we're on their side.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess that's kind of all in who you ask, maybe. here's what I'm wondering, though, as we're kind of getting through this. When you're the actor who's known for the dramatic roles, the things that are not action, and then you get that agent that's like, hey, we could flip around the career and start doing these, do you think that's sort of a sign that your career is really waning? Because what if Taken didn't pan out, like, for instance? Like,
yeah, well, I mean, they kind of touched on this, and it was a big thing for a couple different actors back in the 60s, and they touched on it in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, is the idea that, like, oh, your career is fading, well, you can go do these, you know, you can switch genres, essentially, and maybe you'll gain a whole new fan base. So that's what happened in real life with Clint Eastwood. That's where they, like, modeled that character in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Is that true? Really?
That's a part of it. Yeah, him. Wow. And then also Steve McQueen. So they're both two actors. Clint Eastwood and Steve McQueen are two actors whose careers started in television, and their career as an actor with movies, yeah, like, wasn't then, really working. Then they go and do spaghetti westerns over in Italy, and okay, they come back, and their careers exploded. Clint Eastwood more so than Steve McQueen, believe it or not.
Yeah, because then he started doing, like, the direct sequel, like, 8 Dirty Harrys and stuff.
Yeah, and those are as a result of showing that he could be a complete badass in the spaghetti westerns.
Gotcha. Okay. So,
but the same thing applies with actors. So people still, like, look at that as a case study, like, oh, okay, so my acting career in this genre is not really working. Maybe I can jump over here and spark it, you know?
So here's kind of like a formula that I have come up with, that I think, I mean, I'm not a famous actor by any stretch, but I am a learned watcher, and I have a finger on the pulse of how films kind of take turns and work careers around and things like that. Mm-hmm. It seems like the actors that are the ones that can do these kind of movies for fun without having to take a huge gamble are the ones that are doing dramatic roles with somewhat of action in there. And yeah, my biggest examples here would be Russell Crowe and Liv Tyler. Because, you know, Russell Crowe, you know, great actor. He did, like, one little action movie with Denzel back in the day, but didn't really leave anything to pursue just that. And, you know, you got Gladiator, which is mm-hmm. the perfect example. It's more drama than action, but it has it in there. People remember it for that.
Yeah.
And then Liv Tyler in Lord of the Rings, man. Badass.
Yeah, that's true.
But that's not an action movie. I mean, I think, what do you think? Like, maybe that is the...
Well, I was thinking, it's kind of along the lines of what you're saying, is Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
He's got his foot in both, you know, both worlds.
Both camps. I think Samuel L. Jackson is, like, the perfect. He can be in Shaft, and then he can be in, you know, something that's going to win an Academy Award.
Did you know, I think he still has it, he has the Guinness Book of World Records for the most acting credits.
Is that true? Wow.
Yeah, something like that. It's like insane amount of, because he just says yes to everything.
I remember I remember 1 year he was on Jon Stewart back when he did The Daily Show, and he was saying something like he had 12 films coming out that year. I was like, holy crap.
Yeah, right?
It's like every month he's in one or two movies. It's crazy. That hasn't been happening since that year, but I mean, like, right there, it's just off the wall.
Yeah. I bet he's one of those people that, like, his career was fledgling and it sucked in the beginning, and then he told himself, like, you know, if I ever get this thing off the ground, I'm gonna milk it. I'm gonna do everything. You know? He's 188 credits.
Damn. What, I mean, Mark Wahlberg too. I mean, think about it. Patriots Day, The Fighter. You know, they kind of got that action-esque in there, you know, even though they weren't meant to be, for sure. They're dramatic movies. But then it could be in Two Guns, for instance.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think Mark Wahlberg is one of those where, I think what he does is he always makes sure to take a step back. Like, he'll do some cheesy stuff, and then he'll you go, okay, I'm gonna do the fighter, you know.
But and the thing is, it works so well because in the public eye, nobody's batting an eye, nobody's rolling their eyes like, oh god, Mark Wahlberg's in this movie. Like, if Daniel Day-Lewis was in Bad Boys 3, people would be like, what the fuck, LA? You know what I mean? Like, it's not misplaced, and because he's kind of worked a career to make that fit.
You know who else we're missing out of the list is Johnny Depp.
Not really
the pirates, action, but
his
career was serious, and his roles, he like morphs into these characters.
He trusts the directors. I think he has just a good feel for who is going to make a good movie, and when he found Tim Burton, he just rode that train, man.
Yeah, but that
Ed Wood, I mean, right?
Fantastic Beasts are just terrible.
Yeah, I'm wondering if, but here's the thing, though, it's like, he has a daughter, and, you know, that might be kind of why he's at a point where he can do that to entertain whoever he wants to entertain. He's definitely not in it for the paycheck anymore.
Yeah, I guess so.
And it was a, you know, say what you want about the movies, but the role he played was pretty cool. I mean, it was different. And I think that's kind of, you were telling me one time, like, something like Brando told Depp once that there's only so many characters we can play.
Yeah. And
it might be key to just find people that you would never see yourself playing. And that guy was never, that's definitely not a cookie cutter Johnny Depp whatsoever.
Yeah. Isn't that, so actually speaking of Johnny Depp, there was a movie, I think it just totally got shit canned. That was like about the Biggie thing.
You know, oh yeah, the Tupac, and he's like a cop or something with Forest Whitaker.
Yeah, I don't think that's coming out. I think
it's not coming out. I saw a trailer for it. It's not coming out.
Is it called City of Lies?
Something like that.
Okay, it already came out, but I think it didn't even hit theaters because of some it's because of his career. I'm pretty sure he like, you know, because he's so controversial. Yeah, City of Lies, 2018.
Like because of his controversy with the whole dog thing in Australia?
Oh, wait. So it says 2018. The release date was December 21st, 2018, in quotes, or no, in parentheses, Lithuania. Did it only come out in Lithuania?
I wonder if it just got pushed back a lot, because that New Mutants movie,
it's like not out yet in America.
Yeah.
It's been released in Italy, Lithuania, and Italy.
I think it got pushed back. It was definitely kind of riding on the heels of that. What was the one about NWA?
Straight Outta Compton?
Yes. Yeah. You know what I mean? And the Notorious B.I.G. movie that was before that, I think, did fairly well. So just kind of, you know, riding the wave. And I think it just didn't hit a part of interest, especially with all these comic book movies. It probably would have been buried anyway, so maybe they're just doing a chess move with that, who knows.
Have you seen Murder on the Orient Express? I'm just going through his thing now. Like, you didn't like it? I didn't see it yet. It looks good, but
I thought so too. Branagh was good. Johnny Depp was in it for like a minute. The whole minute he's in the trailer is like all he's in it for. And I thought, you know, we might be able to see a different side of, what's her name? Daisy Ridley. But she didn't get to shine. The only person I liked in that movie was Branagh and Willem Dafoe. But you watch that movie and you get through it and you're like, I guess it was worth a Redbox dollar. It just wasn't anything special. I thought it was going to be a lot cooler and more smart. And really, I felt like I was the smartest one in the room. So, I'm not like a person that really likes to bash movies either, but like, you know, I'm just going to tell you flat out, like, wasn't that great?
Well, that's kind of my attitude lately. It's very rare that I see a movie that I feel like was smart. I'm like,
yeah.
I felt like I was actively thinking through the movie. I feel like that's like a fault of the Hollywood system right now, that they want to play everything safe and they don't want to leave anything on the table for you to misinterpret, so they just like say it, you know.
I think it might not fit what most people might think when you say smart, but I think that Ford versus Ferrari might be kind of a thought-provoking kind of film.
That looks really good, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So in closing, which one of these... Who would you like to see make a resurgence in a serious role?
Make a resurgence, like an action star turning into a serious role? I would really like to see Nicolas Cage, frankly, because I know he has the acting. I thought, like, in Snowden, it might, like, start to... I was like, oh, he's in a movie with Oliver Stone? Like, this could be it. This could be him coming back.
Yeah, he, like, had a real small part in that, and it wasn't much.
But, you know, then I see that he's not doing what he used to be doing. Now he's doing better films. Like, Mandy was brilliant, man.
See,
but that was not...
to see that.
It's not meant for the mass consumption. But the acting, even though it might be like the Cage Rage people talk about, it was well placed. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's definitely another Leaving Las Vegas role out there. Is he going to get it? I don't know. But...
yeah.
I would like to see that. And then I wonder, like, who would you think that might be a bit more poignant could be our next action star?
You know, I'm wondering about Robert Pattinson. His career
shift. He could be a good Batman. And I just saw a trailer for The Lighthouse. That looks great. It's not an action film, but he's got the chops.
Yeah, I'm wondering if his career will take a shift. Someone I think is probably going to have a career that it's like, I don't think he's that. I think he needs to, like, take a break and go to acting school.
Can't wait.
Is what?
I can't wait.
Okay. I got to look it up. Zac Efron.
Oh yeah.
I think he's okay when he does rom-coms or comedies.
Did you see the Ted Bundy movie he did? That was all right.
It was just terrible. I thought that the idea was great, and there was a couple of good gem moments. But him as the role, I'm like, okay, you look the part, but the moment he opens mouth, I'm like, oh.
Mm.
He didn't, like, sell it for me. And I guess I get the director's intentions and the writer-director. Is like, oh, let's get a guy that represents, like, a sex symbol, because at the time, this whole thing about this, like, controversial thing about Ted Bundy was that he was like, oh, well, he's, like, kind of a good looking guy, like, you wouldn't suspect him to be a murderer, right? And so they're kind of playing on this rock star mentality that he's, like, on the run, and there was something rock star about it, and I get that, but I just really wish that he just brought it, you know. This wish is acting was more on par, and that's why I said take a break, go to acting school, get really fucking good at acting, and I bet he'll come back and be the motherfucking next action star. You know, he's got the look.
Yeah,
he just doesn't have the acting chops yet, because believe it or not, being a action star, it takes some acting skills. But
yeah, no, you're not wrong. Well, it has been real. Next
been real.
Week.
Is that the new outro? It's been
real. I think so. Yeah. It was a good episode.
It's been real with two E's.
Yeah.
Really
smart. All right. So next week, talking about Jane, Silent Bob, Kevin Smith.
Bringing it back. Reboot.
Yes.
I'm excited.
Pioneer for the indie filmmaker, I think. So... can't wait for that episode. Until next time.
Me too.
Jordan?
Until next time, keep watching movies, and I don't know. Keep going to the movies.
Keep listening to podcasts, too. It would help.
Keep listening to podcasts.
Subscribe.
Subscribe. Like, subscribe. You know, check us out on YouTube. All of the above.